Quick note before we begin, this podcast was actually recorded 3 months ago, and for various reasons, we didn't release it, but we still think the content's really good, so we're going to release it, but keep that in mind when we're talking about versions and dates and so forth. This was the world as seen by us back in March. On with the show.
Hello, and welcome to Android Developers Backstage. I'm Chet Haas from the UI Toolkit team.
I'm Tor Norby from the Android Tools team.
And today, we have a guest way over from a totally different team, the Tools team.
Hi, I'm Esteban. I'm from the Performance Tools team in Android Studio.
Yay, more tools people.
So you two work together, and we just, like, we couldn't come up with a guest today, so you're like, I'll just grab someone on the way out of the office. So that's, actually, the original plan was we were going to talk about 2.3, which just came out as of when we are recording this. And then Tor's like, well, we talked about some of that stuff before, but we have even cooler stuff that's like just on the verge of being released. So why don't we talk about that? And then by the time we actually process the recording of this, it'd be a good time to release that. So we're going to like talk about all that stuff today, which means I'm not going to have much to say.
What do you mean? You're a daily user of the tools, I assume.
Ish.
Yeah, good. All right. Okay. What's your favorite feature in 2.3, Chet?
The number. I really like the versioning scheme.
Yeah, I agree with that. So let's talk about 2.3. You know, we actually have talked about a number of the things in 2.3 already. When we had the first preview, we talked about the stuff that was new. So I remember talking about lint baselines, my favorite feature in 2.3.
Okay, but you're referring to it and everyone will be like, oh yeah, I remember that conversation. But let's just pretend that they don't. So go ahead and actually tell us again what that is.
Well, I probably shouldn't lead with my own feature. That's just not very nice. The biggest...
Why change now?
That's true. All right. No, I'm really not. I think the biggest change we did in 2.3 UI-wise, and maybe it's not the biggest change, but it's a very notable change, right? And we did this after the preview, so it is new for our listeners at least. And that is that we changed the Instant Run UI. And actually, Esteban was also involved in Instant Run, just like I was back in the day. So the big change here is that when we first did Instant Run, we had the Run button overloaded, right? So the Run button would either hot patch or code swap or do a fresh build, you know, and we sort of overloaded it all on the Run button. In retrospect, that was a mistake. And so we've undone that mistake in 2.3. And so now there's two buttons. The Run button is now the safe button. It will always restart your process. It does not try to do some sort of live patching of your app, because in some cases, it just can't do it safely. I mean, in theory, your app could be caching stuff, right? That we just don't know that you've cached, and bad stuff happens when you try to combine old data with new program. So the Run button is now, it'll always restart your app. It's still going to be doing a code swap, which we know is safe still. So it's not, we're not risking weird behavior, which is what people had issues with Instant Run for in the past. The code swap is roughly twice as fast as a full APK install, right? So it's still a big savings, but you're not having these like, hey, I pressed the Run button and my changes aren't there. What happened? So the Run button is, you know, faster than a non-Instant Run button, but it's safe. Then there's the Apply Changes button next to it with a lightning button on it. That's the hot swap button. That's the one that tries the optimistic patching of your app. We're still working on making that one safer, and we have some other cool stuff happening in 2.4 where we have platform support for this. But that's the big Instant Run change, I would say.
So instead of trying to do everything magical, you push it on the developer a bit to say which is the one that you think is more appropriate.
If you have a small app and you don't care, just press the Run button. You know, when you are in the middle of tweaking something, so you're like, hey, let me just tweak this one logic. The app is, I already have the game running, you know, I just want to change some physics here. You can sit there and do that pretty safely when you're changing method bound implementations. And even some resource changes are safe to make. And you could tweak when you want to. But if you're pressing the button and, you know, like, let's say you're editing a theme and for some reason the font isn't changing its size, which you expected, well, then just press the real Run button, the one that'll restart the app, and then it'll always work.
So if you, is the new lightning bolt button the same as the old one, which is it will try to do the fast thing, and if it cannot, then it'll back off?
Yes, it will. It'll back off as well. That was something we debated, and I was one of the people who voted against that. I wanted it to like basically say I couldn't do that. But anyway, yeah, it does behave that way, that it'll restart the app if you can't do the live patch.
Okay. I would assume that the biggest decision in breaking this out to two buttons is that you had to come up with new assets for another button. Back in the day, in the old ADT, I have to say the icons in the tool were one of the worst things about the platform. Just in terms of like the graphics that they had on them and what they represented and the fact that we just duplicated the graphics for multiple buttons because we couldn't get around.
Yeah, I think I've told my story before, the DDMS icon. That was just like a cutout of the Google Maps location for Dalvik, the island in Iceland, the city in Iceland.
That totally meaningful. Based on.
Yeah. Good times.
So, but we solved that this time.
Well, right? We solved it by just taking the instant run button, the lightning, and that is now the icon for the apply changes button, and the run button is the normal IntelliJ run icon. So we were able to do it without extra icon work, as far as I know. Yeah.
All right. So we added a button. That's huge.
Well, I want to phrase it differently. We actually listened to user feedback and we tried to address this issue that people liked Instant Run, but it was unreliable. And that really soured the whole experience. People would spend, you know, sometimes hours wondering why their app was broken when it actually was a caching bug because they pressed run, not realizing that we were doing, you know, trying to keep the app running. Now you can, if you don't care about this, just press the run button. If you want to do tweaks, press the apply changes button, you know.
Okay. So I hear you. We listened to user feedback and we added a button.
Right. On the other thing we've done is the build cache is now enabled. And the thing about the build cache is that it basically caches all the dexing of all the libraries like appcompat and so forth in a location outside your project. It's in your home directory normally. And that means that, you know, if you have 7 or 8 or 9 projects or whatever, and they're all using appcompat, what happened in the past was for a clean build, you would redex appcompat. That is unnecessary. It's going to be the same thing every time. It's the same bits. And so now that's sort of kept in a separate cache. So basically you have faster builds when you're, you know, building some of these artifacts over and over.
A lot of disk space implications. I'm in a situation on my drive where like the cache that IntelliJ takes up, either Android Studio or raw IntelliJ, ends up being significant in the amount of bits it's actually taken up on my drive.
It is large, but I know what the biggest disk usage is for you. It is a checkout of the Android source code, which is what?
At different
How
partition.
Many hundred gigabytes
different
are we talking?
Partition. I'm talking on my home partition, and I cannot move the IntelliJ cache. It takes up more. So when you say, oh,
you
we're
can,
creating
actually.
Multiple
there
caches.
Is a there is a very simple command line flag you can use to set where IntelliJ sources caches. So we should talk offline. Okay. But
and in this case, it'll save disk space because the cache is shared between different projects. So beforehand, when you were indexing, you would have all that output on each project. But now because it's in your home directory, it's reused. Because it's appcompat and all the libraries that are shared.
And all the resources. And that means
I'm saving this space now.
Yeah, because what IntelliJ would do, so it's not just the actual expanded AAR files, it's also IntelliJ's index of it. Happens just once because it's indexing that one location as opposed to indexing appcompat in each directory.
Okay.
It's a good change. All right, constraint layout. So we had a whole episode on constraint layout last spring, actually, before it shipped into 2. But they've added some new features, you know, during the beta period, you know, of Studio, they added ratios and chains. And so these are features that basically make constraint layout even more powerful. So, you know, you should go back and listen to the original episode for why you should use constraint layout, not relative layout. You know, you have, for example, weights on the constraints, so you can have proportional spacing, things like that. Ratios let you say, for example, hey, I want this view to have a 16:9 aspect ratio, right? So when the width increases, it'll also correspondingly increase the height, right? So if you have, for example, a video player, this is kind of important, right? Chains let you say that something should behave as a group. So you can, for example, If you add bidirectional links on a series of widgets, they become a chain. And now you can set certain properties like, hey, I want you to all spread out and share the space equally, or to pack yourself together in the center, or, you know, some proportional assignment again. So these are pretty useful features that you can simulate even more layouts with.
We talked in probably that original podcast about the idea of these, I don't know, virtual groups and that they were playing with at the time.
Yeah, so they were playing with that is it. And it's instead of you having to go and say, this is a group with a new concept, instead, just say, if you form bidirectional dependencies between these, that forms a chain.
Nice.
And it's sort of visualized as such in the layout editor. You can actually see chains between the widgets. Hey, these things are linked. And now there are properties you can use to actually, you know, treat them all. Like you can set margins on all of them, for example.
All right.
So pretty useful. On the layout editor side, there was a lot of architectural work. There actually were a couple of visual regressions, but that's because we sort of redone a lot of the engine for layout editor. As an example, it now will use the layout, the constraint layout from your project, not the one that was bundled with Studio. So it's just more accurate. This is a better implementation, basically. And we have some features. The palette is brand new, better categorization and search and things like that. And we have starred properties. So you know how the property sheet has an inspector? When you, for example, click on a button, you'll see, hey, you can set the label over here. It's sort of a customized view of the things you can set on the button. Those are the most common properties, but there also is, sometimes you want some other property that we didn't say is the most common, right? And then you can sort of zoom over to the expert or full property table, where you can choose from any property at all that's available on the widget. You can now star any of those. There's like a little, you know, like in Gmail, you can actually star an individual property, and then it'll show up in the component inspector cell instead, persistently. So you get to say, hey, these properties are my favorites, and then they show up on the first primary panel.
For that
widget type.
Specific view?
That's right.
For the entire view. Okay, for so that, every time you bring up a frame layout, it's going to show the property that
exactly,
you frame layout.
Exactly.
So is it for subclasses as well? So like if you...
I don't know. I didn't
implement. If you put
this.
It on view group, is it going to show up for a linear layout?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I'm assuming that we're just remembering per widget, what do you want here?
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I want to go back to the part where you said the layout editor basically is just better implementation. Can we define that at all?
Well, you know, so layout editor in 2.2 was a complete rewrite of everything.
Yeah.
Right? And certain shortcuts were taken. And some technical debt was incurred, and you know we are still paying that off.
But you're a big fan of shortcuts in IntelliJ, right?
Yeah, I am. I am. Oh. This was, you know, unfortunate, but you know it happened, and it's better now. And we have even more stuff in 2.4 that's just, you know, making the light editor better. Okay. We are hearing from a lot of users that, you know, they had some bugs that they were struggling with in 2.2, and 2.3 made things a lot better for a lot of people, and 2.4 even better.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is based on user feedback, we made things better.
That's right.
All right, great.
Yes.
All right.
Added icons, made things better. And that's as a layout editor. We've already talked in the past about the WebP supports. I won't reiterate it. And we also talked about the lint baselines where, you know, you get to sort of say, hey, here's all the technical debt I have in my project. Only report new issues beyond what I've already sort of checked in as the current baseline of problems. Every time I say baseline, you know, Chet's eyes light up because he's thinking, you know,
text.
Graphics.
Yay.
Yeah, nothing to do with that. It's basically sort of setting a bar for where things are right now. It's the base. All right. The last thing I'll talk about is the App Links Assistant. So App Links is this way where you can decide how a URL should be handled. So let's say you're New York Times, right? And you want that when people, you're building the New York Times app or some newspaper app, right? Someone clicks on a link to an article online. You would like that if they have your app installed, it should open your app instead because you can do a better presentation that way. How does that work? Or what if what if there was some competitor, fake news, that decides to hijack your links and replace the contents, right? So App Links let you indicate that your app can handle a certain kind of URL. And then there's this whole thing where you on your website will actually put some sort of digital asset file that validates that, hey, there's a link between this app and this URL so that Google can authenticate. This is the legit app that should be handling this URL.
Right. So this was a feature that came out in, I think, Marshmallow.
Yeah.
And it was basically a JSON file that you would put on your website. So then when the Android's system would reach out to that website, it would say, oh, this is one of these things that can be handled locally. New York Times app is installed. Launch that instead.
Yeah. So you just click on it and you just go straight into the app instead of... You know, the whole like, hey, do you want to open this with Chrome?
Yep.
Or do you, yeah.
Okay, so that feature was there for a while. And now fast forward to 2.3.
Yeah, that was a feature. Still pretty difficult to do because you have to declare certain intent handlers. You have to put certain things on a file. You want to verify the link works.
Yep.
So we had this feature that we built in Studio called the Assistant Window. And the only assistant we ever had was the Firebase Assistant. But we made sure the architecture and UI was sort of not hard-coded to Firebase. So this is the second assistant example where if you go to the tools menu and invoke the App Links Assistant, it'll walk you through all these aspects, right? So it has a way to help you inject stuff into your manifest to actually declare the links you want to intercept. You can test things right there. You can paste in URLs and verify that they're correct. They help you upload create the digital asset file and upload it and sort of walks you through all the steps. And there's actually a really good video we posted along with the 2.3 launch that kind of shows you how this works.
That is pretty cool because it did seem like a several step process through different, you know, different ways of building your application life. It's still, I mean, you're still developing your website in a completely different, you know, universe and tool. So it'd be even cooler if like you could bring all of those things together. I can't envision that.
Yes.
You know, you're not developing your website with Android Studio, probably.
No.
Right.
This is really for, you know, when you have something that's both on the web and links are being passed around, but you want the app to be able to handle them and go straight to the right either article or recipe or whatever, right? You know, bank account, whatever it is. And you sort of want to make sure that these URLs can be authenticated and verified. And that's what the assistant really is meant for. It's meant for things where it isn't just a matter of us adding a refactoring. It's a multi-step process. Yeah. And we're actually building more assistants into 2.4 and 2.5 to handle additional scenarios where we can't just make a change for you. You want to look at things and make decisions, and we're sort of guiding you through the process. Yeah. So I think that's all for 2.3, unless there was anything you wanted to add, Esteban?
No, I think you covered it.
Okay, I did.
Esteban, as far as I understand it, Esteban was busy during 2.3.
He was coding.
2.4.
And, that's pretty much. 2.3 already happened? Is that gone already?
That's right.
Okay, so then on to 2.4. Or we could just cut it off here and make Esteban wonder why we dragged him over to the studio today.
Yeah, thanks for the moral support.
Good.
Yeah. No, so 2.3 shipped as final. Now, our general philosophy on the tools team is when we ship final, we are also have been working for a while on the next release, and we tend to go into previews.
We change things and actually work on the previous release instead. Why don't we go backwards ever?
Well, to compare Android to the framework Studio team, like what if the second you download an N, you can also get the next version preview, right? Like that's the way we do it generally, right? Because we have frequent releases and so forth. So as 2.3 ships out the stable, we are ready with 2.4 preview with a lot of really exciting features. The most exciting one is the one we're going to talk about next. And I guess at this point, I'll just kind of turn it over to Esteban, who's going to share some prepared remarks.
Yes, everything is scripted.
No, we told him no prep. What is it that you're about to unveil?
So we rewrote all the performance tools in Android Studio, and we are going to be launching a new set of monitors. All the monitors that you know and love in Android Studio as they are now are completely rewritten.
Wait,
I think rewritten,
the ones that they love went away.
I think rewritten is underselling it, because like we had some pretty basic ones and now we have some majorly powerful ones. So it's not like, hey, we took the old UI and we put a better code behind
it. The old UI is what I call the engineer UI. Right? It was designed by engineers. And now we have an amazing UX team that actually designed the whole UX for the tool. The UI and all experience.
And then based on user feedback, we took away the tools that users wanted.
Yes.
Okay.
Nice.
The user feedback was we want better tools.
Oh, so we actually replaced them with something else.
Is it the same takeaway you had from 2.3? We got user feedback to make things better, and we did.
Okay.
And there's a lot of more data that you're collecting.
The pipeline is completely new.
Yeah.
So we are getting much more information than we did before. And we do it in a way that opens the door for a new version of the profilers in coming O that will have much more information. So the one we're getting in 2.4 is basically a reduced feature set of what we want to have, but is what we can have without the platform changes that are coming in O. And even though we don't have the power of O yet, we have much more data than before. We can see I can go through CPU and network.
Yeah, let's start
and
with CPU, for example.
So let's start from the top-level monitors. So top-level monitors, we used to have CPU, memory, and network before. Mm-hmm. We added the event monitor that shows you something that is very complex to see in Android apps, which is what is going on in my app. So we have what we call the event bar that shows you which activity you are on, shows you events like touch events or rotation events. And that gives you an idea of what your app is doing, right?
Yeah, this is kind of a difficult thing to discuss on a podcast. If this was like a video or a demo, I think the point would be conveyed very easily if you could actually just see what's happening.
Yeah, I'm trying to describe a very visual tool.
It's a very visual tool, and so when Esteban gives a demo, you're basically like you connect the device and you're looking at the scrolling view. And when he rotates the device, you see a rotation event sort of overlaid on top of the timeline.
Yeah, and you see what effect it has on memory, what effect it has on CPU and network. You see your activity restarting. You actually see when you rotate your device, you see your activity being destroyed. You see the gap between the activity destroyed and the activity restart, and you see what happens in memory, network, and CPU when that happens.
Right, and what are some other events? You mentioned touching, so you can see when there's a touch on the surface and for the duration of the touch and when the touch is released.
Yeah, you can see keyboard events too. Mm-hmm. So whenever your app receives a word from the keyboard, you can see it there. You can see the word being written or volume buttons. Basically, that gives you a context of what's going on. And all the monitors are integrated in one piece.
And so it's scrolling by. How fast is it scrolling? Like how many seconds does it stay on the screen?
As far as you want to go.
Depends on how wide your screen is.
Okay.
Well, that's a big difference actually with the previous monitors. The previous monitors were fixed zoom, and fixed amount of data, and you couldn't see more than what you had. Now we pipe everything through a database, so you can go as far back as you want, and you can see dead processes or disconnected devices. We keep all that data for our users to do digging later.
So years ago, I used to be working on sort of low-level optimization stuff, and I was using TraceView for this. This is before the days of SysTrace. TraceView was not a sampling profiler. It was instrumentation profiler, and I would end up chasing bottlenecks that were not bottlenecks because the overhead of the profiler was so high that it would skew the results. Right.
Yes.
So what's the overhead that you have? If you're tracing everything from like touch events to rotation to whatever, all the stuff you were talking about, like what's the overhead that is being injected into the app while it's running?
This is not much. Of course, you know, every time you measure something, you skew it, right? There's no escape from that. But all the events we get, we actually get them by instrumenting the app at compile time. So when we compile the app, we add the hooks we need, and this has very little overhead. We're not doing things after the fact to try to get this data, and we do most of the things out of process. So we actually have two processes on device, and the one that does the heavy lifting is not the app's process.
Yep.
So that should not impact the CPU.
And then it's also not per method, which was TraceView's problem, right?
Well,
so it's
the data collection for CPU profiling. The new pipeline supports arbitrary data collection pipelines, and we still support the old one, the one that TraceView uses with all its skews and the same problems it had before.
Yeah.
And that's the one we are going to launch with. But the pipeline is generic enough for us to support different methods of collection, and there's going to be a new one in O coming that is much more accurate sampling profiling, that is much more accurate than the one that is present in TraceView. But this is one thing that Studio didn't have before, is sampling profiler. We had a version of the CPU profiler that only did instrumentation, and in 2.4 you're going to see sampling profiling as well.
Right. So just to clarify, I think something that's a little bit confusing, certainly to me and possibly to people that aren't me, is that there is a difference between tools that people can get to and tools that are integrated with Android Studio. So when you say Android Studio didn't offer sampling profiler, that's true, but people would use TraceView in a sampling profiler way by running Monitor, which is accessible from Studio, right? So I think you're drawing a distinction between things that are actually integrated into the IDE directly, as opposed to tools that were bundled in this other sort of side process thing called Monitor.
That is correct. One of the biggest goals we have is to have one integrated tool that allows you to do all the profiling.
Yeah.
And when I say Studio cannot do this, is Studio itself integrated with the rest of the tooling.
Yeah.
Now, by having this data inside Studio, you can correlate it with the events that we capture. It opens the door for more things than just having outside of Studio in Monitor, for example.
And by the way, we're getting rid of Monitor, right? So I think that the last remaining feature that Monitor had that we didn't have in Studio was the device file explorer, where you could sort of sit and, you know, it was a remote file explorer for Android.
I never used that part of it.
Well, okay. That's why we had to keep it alive, because we ported most of the other tooling. But in 2.4, we actually have added that as well. So Studio now has a file explorer window where you can sort of drill into the files on the device. And so we can actually delete Monitor, because the code base for Monitor hasn't been maintained for several years. It's built from an old branch using, you know, a different UI toolkit. No code sharing with the rest of Studio.
Wasn't it like ADT based?
It took some of the plugins from our Eclipse plugin and sort of built them as an RCP, rich client platform bundle,
like
on its own.
Migration to the new tool world.
Yeah.
So what were the things in there? So I remember TraceView, obviously. Allocation Tracker was there. Is that folded over? Do
that's
we have a version of that?
We
now?
Have... The way the new profilers work in Studio is, I told you we have this monitor view that you can see the different aspects of the app. And one of the philosophies we have is you can dive into these areas and explore more. So in the memory area, you can dive in and do allocation tracking, heap dumps. And one thing that is not possible neither on Monitor nor in the previous version of Studio is you can do a heap dump while at the same time you're doing allocation tracking. And all the objects in the dump will have call stacks. All the objects that were created at the time that you were doing the allocation tracking will have call stacks. That's a brand new feature in 2.4.
Okay. So just to belabor the point here, the way that I have typically used Allocation Tracker before is I want to know whether I'm allocating during some particular inner loop or during some phase, right? So I would start the process for whatever this thing was, you know, click on the button that's going to trigger the event. And then I would do Allocation Tracker and let it run for, you know, some number of milliseconds. Then I would get the tracking data, and then I could see everything allocated and chase down the call stacks for those. How does that work in the new world?
It works in the new world. If by new world you mean O, is very different. But let's talk 2.4 first.
2.4.
In 2.4 is the same thing. So you are running your app and you say, okay, now I want to track my allocations, and you start a marker, and we show you in the timeline when that happens. We show you at the same time how many objects you have live, a garbage collection event, so you can actually get an idea of what's going on in the app.
Yeah. While it's running, right?
While it's running,
live counters.
You see in the timeline that you're tracking allocations, and you can touch the app and you can see those events, and then you stop it. And in there, you can dive in and see all the objects. I'm moving my hands a lot, but people are not listening to my hands.
Yeah, let the record show that Esteban is moving his hands.
Yes. So you can dive in all your allocations and see what's going on.
And that what you do with that is you sort of zoom in on the timeline then, and then what?
There is one thing that, this is a great bridge to what we are going to do in O. One of the things the platform didn't have before O is when you take allocations in a range of time, you get a bunch of objects that were allocated in that range of time, but you don't know when.
Yeah.
So even if you zoom in, you basically have a black box of saying, yeah, in these 5 seconds, all of these happened, but we don't know which ones went first.
Yep.
What's happening in O is we work with ART very closely to have a tooling API that allows us to attach a component to ART directly and do our own allocation tracking and send the call stacks and send for example, timestamps, right?
Yeah.
So you could zoom in into a very precise time range and say, what happened here when I touched the screen or when I rotated, what were the objects that were allocated?
Right.
And more than that, we want to remove this restriction that you have, that is start allocation, stop allocation. We are going to track allocations live as much as we can.
Okay.
So users don't have to do this.
Yeah. So I was curious about that when you said you would put a marker in and you would start tracking this information the way that I used to with Allocation Tracker, right? So to what extent are the performance tools simply running all the time, and to what extent do you opt into whatever information you want to derive from them?
Our goal is that you don't have to enable anything. Because what happens usually is like, oh my God, this happened on my app. What the hell did I do? And then you go back and look at it, right? We want to blur the line between what a profiler and a debugger is, so you can go and inspect what just happened. But of course, like you said, this has a performance impact. So we're going to allow you to opt out of these features if you want to do, for example, specific CPU profiling, that you don't want all these features to skew your CPU. But for the day-to-day usage, we want to have it as a debug build enabled. If you enable the profiling features, you're going to get all of it. And
are they enabled by default? So if you run a debug build, are profiling is simply running?
In 2.4, they're not.
Okay.
And the reason they're not is because they add, I mentioned we do instrumentation at compile time, so they add an extra bit of compile time. But we show to the user message saying what we call advanced profiling is not enabled. That requires the Gradle plugin version 2.4, actually. So we guide the user through an update process, and we take them to the checkbox that they need to tick to say, yeah, I want all the goodies. And then they can disable that. And you know, if it causes too much problems and too many problems, then they can disable that. But you get all of it or none of it.
Okay. So then I'm confused. Let's go back to the marker example where they want to start tracking the data. So they did opt into that.
Or is that one, for 2.4, they don't need to opt into that one. The allocation tracking, because it's an action that you take, is there. And when you take it, it's going to happen.
You're talking about the background recording of events.
I'm talking about the background recording of events. I'm talking about what is, to me, the most exciting feature, the network profiler, which we'll talk in a sec. But that one will be enabled only by the user. The things that will be always there are heap dumps, as they were before, allocation tracking, as it was before, being able to do CPU captures, as they did before. So all of those, because there are user actions there, they're always there in debuggable builds, right? If the build is debuggable, then you can do all of that.
Okay. All right.
So you open up the profiler main window, the event log, and then you can do that always. Like your app is running, just look at the device. And then there are actions there to take, like, hey, start allocation tracking.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Let's talk about the network profiler.
That is, what we have in studio right now is a monitor that shows you how many bytes are going in and going out. But we went further than this in 2.4. And if advanced profiling is enabled, which means we instrument the app to get more data, we actually allow you to dive in more and see not only how many bytes are being transferred, but you can see how many connections you have open. You can see the state of the radio. This is important because, you know, it uses a lot of battery. So you can see that if you make a request, your radio goes to high power mode and stays there for 7 or 10 seconds, and then it drops to low power mode. You can see what your app is doing to the radio. And more than that, you can select the range and see all the network requests that happened at that time. And you can click on them and see the actual payload that was downloaded.
Wait, you can see the request? You can see the actual, hey, you're hitting http://?
Yeah. If someone is familiar with the Chrome developer tools, then you can see the requests. It's very similar to that. And right. You can actually see the image that you just downloaded or the XML. And
you do that because you instrument the app, so you can sort of look for network calls and surround those with
Yes. The caveat on this is we need to support each network library one by one. And we started with the most common one, which is HTTP URL connection, the standard one to download. And we will be adding more when users request that they need this library. This only works for Java. So if you do network requests or if you have a fancy HTTP stack that you implemented yourself, sorry, we're not going to be able to decode that. But if you do standard networking on your app, you're going to be able to debug what's going on.
Is there some API that library authors could call? So that, you know, like if I was the author, and I'm not, if I was the author of some networking library where I could go, hey, you know, I'm going to look for this, I'm going to reflectively call this API. And whenever I'm making a network request, I'm going to basically notify, I'm going to leave behind some data for the studio profiler so that users of my library in studio can also benefit from this feature.
That's a great question. And we debated that. We have our APIs, of course. When we instrument the app, we call our own APIs, and we've discussed where we want to open these to our developers, so they could just call them and track their stuff manually. Our APIs are not stable yet, so for us to open them now would be a bit premature, but it's an option that we keep open.
Okay. All right.
So that was networking. Anything else on networking?
One interesting thing is because we do this at user level code, right? So we do it after the fact, not as a platform thing. We get all the requests after they've been decrypted. So if you have HTTPS connections, we can see them as well.
You put that in the database?
And
this is don't live. Send your password.
This
is that
this
what
we're is saying? Live. The user can choose what to do with that.
Okay. All right. Interesting. All right, so we talked about the CPU profiler. We've talked about
memory.
We didn't talk a lot about the memory profiler. So I know we had a very good heap analyzer in the past that I've used many times.
Yeah.
It was particularly useful to debug the instant run runtime library to sort of chase who is holding on to this cached value. So what you're doing there is you're showing a live view of the overall heap usage. You mentioned allocation tracking.
Yes, one of the major things we did between 2.3 and 2.4 in terms of memory profiling in Android Studio is, and all of them actually, we were very much based on captures. If you remember in 2.3, we have a capture tool window that all the captures are saved there. We know we are no longer following that philosophy. This is a shift in philosophy because we want the profilers to be as interactive as possible. So you can export the files if you want to, but we don't save them as files ourselves. We don't show them as files. It's more of a dynamic experience. And for memory, what we want to show is basically, we want to have a view that allows users to inspect a set of objects. And either a set of allocations or a heap dump is the same thing. It's just a bunch of objects. They may or may not have properties or may or may not have call stacks. So we unify the two UIs. In the previous version, for example, we supported for allocations, you could group all the allocations by call stack because allocations by definition have call stacks, right? This is why you do allocation tracking. So you could group them by call stack. And on heap dumps, we didn't have any call stack information. But when call stack information was added to heap dumps, we were in the position that we had to duplicate UI or, you know. Mm-hmm. Now we merged the two. So you can, if your heap dump has call stacks, we can use them. We can group by call stacks. If it doesn't, so we merged everything into a unified view of you are looking at a bunch of objects and you can group them by whatever you want. So that's a major shift in the memory profiler is the unification of the two philosophies, which opens the door for the next one when you don't take any captures anymore and you can see all the objects. And we are planning to integrate that with the debugger, so you can actually click on an object and fetch information directly from the device. So this is just, this new version is just the first version. We have a lot more to do on these profilers.
Right. Speaking of more to do, I remember that one of the plans for the heap analyzer was to sort of have a bunch of actions on it. So we had, for example, there was one action there to find duplicated strings. There was another one to, what was it? Find leaked activities.
Yes.
Have you added any more of these actions?
We have found that when profilers try to be smart, they usually make mistakes. So if there's one thing we're good at, it's trying to not be smart. That's my philosophy too. Works great. We try to show the users as much as we can in a way that is digestible. One thing we don't want to have is, you know, what we call the C-trace shock, right? That you open C-trace, oh my God, what is all of this, right? So we want to give all the information, but in layers.
Right.
And this is true for all the memory profilers that we have that shows you all this info, you know, that leaked objects. It's very difficult to decide whether you just leaked an object, right? Because if you have a cache,
there is a reference. Someone is holding onto it, maybe some
purpose.
Maybe
it's intentional, maybe, it's not. The one we do know is activities. Activities have flags that we can determine, you know, this is destroyed activity, and you keep a reference to it. This is wrong. It's just wrong.
Right.
Don't do that. Duplicated strings is another one that could be intentional, very unlikely. But more than that, it actually, we found that it just confuses. We did UX studies and user studies, and it confuses users, saying, why are you showing this to me if this is intentional? The same with all the other ones, right? CPU profiling. You have CPU 100%. Oh, bad CPU usage. Well, no, I'm writing a game. I want to do that. Just leave me alone. Don't highlight this. So that's what we're trying to do. The ones you mentioned, we'll bring them back. They're not in 2.4 right now, but we'll bring them back.
Okay.
So, related question, back in the day when the only thing that we did with heaps was there was a button somewhere in ADT or monitor that you would click on and you would get this file and then you would like transcode it to some other file and then I would run mat and then I would use this horrible tool to try to figure out where the leaks were. Like, have we supplanted that whole thing now? Can you get exactly that information of basically, you know, given the domain knowledge of the things that I know that I am caching and I'm trying not to cache?
Yeah.
Can I use this to get all that?
Yeah, and we have cool data about that. That we now, obviously, when you say transcode to a different format, that is basically removing some Android-specific data from the heap dump file, right? It's still an H profile. H profile is a collection of tags, and there's a few Android-specific tags that I think is called hprofconv. Just remove those so you can open it in mat.
It just confused the tool, I guess.
Yes. Confuses a way of saying it crashes. Yes. Okay. but what we did in 2.3, when you take a heap dump, we actually open it in Studio, and we give the chance to the users to export it and do an hprofconv right there. And we have stats for that, and only 3% of people are actually exporting it to open it with mat. The rest just live within Studio, and that's it. So we have given enough so that 97% of the users don't need to go to mat.
What is the extra 3% that you get from there, or is it just people used to this other tool? Like, do we think that we have all the capabilities that we need for chasing leaks?
We do. There are some analyses, like what Tor was mentioning, some find me the leaks.
Well, I think they have like a whole OQL, like a whole query language, right? So you can
sort of it's much more powerful, for sure. It's a much more evolved tool. We want to get there. We want to, you know, get to a point that our users don't have to export hprof and go to their tool. But we will have some set of users that will want to use their favorite tool, right?
So what about Leak Canary? So we talked to PY some number of episodes again before about his tool that basically you instrument in your app, and then as you run it, it'll warn you when these bad patterns are happening, right?
Yes.
Is there still a need for that? Is that solving a different need for chasing leaks?
The main difference, we've spoken with Leak Canary, and they are actually using one of our libraries to parse the H profiles.
Yeah.
And the main difference is that users go in their code and say, this object should, they mark the object. So there is an API. And this is back to what Tor was saying before. Are we going to open our API for developers to... If we had that, then the functionality is equivalent, because we could say, we could mark the object, send them back, and when you do a heap dump, we could detect that the object that you marked are gone or not.
But there's also something different in that, like, you could instrument the version that you dog food on your phone for the next 2 weeks, and then you could actually see it while you're going through regular usage with Leak Canary, as opposed to sitting down with the IDE.
Leak Canary does is they add runtime checking, right? So that all your users are actually willingly, as they're using your app, whenever an activity is destroyed, it actually calls an API and it goes and looks and see, hey, is there a problem now? It's runtime overhead versus...
Yeah, it does a heap dump on device, which is very expensive.
So there's, you're saying, hey, it's a debug build. Thank you, debug users, for, helping me find crashes in this.
Right.
What they've also done, as I recall, was that they've found some of the existing known leaks on older versions of Android, right? And sort of whitelist those, so you don't get told, hey, there was a leak in 4.1 for this API, right? Because it's not your fault. It's just you can't deal with it.
Yeah. But our focus is developer... it's live debugging / profiling.
Yeah.
We want to show the users what their app is doing right now, as opposed to a monitoring or data collection tool that you can have in production. This is we want to catch problems before they happen, not in production. So we are focusing heavily on development time.
Yep.
Did we cover all the monitors?
GPU?
Do we have a GPU profiler?
Why?
Graphics in general. Isn't there?
Unfortunately, the GPU monitor is going away in 2.4. We'll bring it back, but like I said, we implemented the new pipeline, and the new pipeline does not support the render monitor as we have now in 2.3.
Yeah.
So momentarily, the render monitor is going to disappear from Android Studio, but we'll bring it back.
Okay, so this is the one that it's the equivalent of what you can run on device to show how long it's taking for each phase of rendering.
The main reason we are taking it out in the first version of 2.4 is because it's too intrusive to have all the time.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Okay. All right.
Were there any other monitors?
And
homeroom. No? We should have a homeroom monitor.
No, I think we covered most of the new features. We're super excited about launching this soon. The new profilers only support API 21 and up, and users can expect a bigger feature set when we release O preview in a couple of months.
So why API 21? Is it have art dependencies?
It has art dependencies. Yes. So we need art, and KitKat's art is particularly difficult to deal
with. Yeah, I mean, we made similar decisions for Instant Run recently. You know, when we launched, we're like, hey, we're going to have 15 and up. And we had all these different pipelines to handle 15 and 19 and 21 and so forth. And we discovered that all of our workarounds to deal with Dalvik weren't quite working in some scenarios. And so we've sort of narrowed it. Like, a majority of people actually deploy to 21 and above. You know, app may support all the way back to whatever, but for their daily driver while they're developing, they're okay with having a higher dependency. Yeah. So we're doing that just to make it more reliable.
Is that an NDK dependencies? Yeah, I mentioned before that we offload a lot of the computation from the app to a separate process.
Yeah.
So whenever you plug your phone into this profiling mode, we actually spawn a native process running on device that will do the heavy lifting. And that needs some native APIs that are only available in 21 and up.
Speaking of native, so you use native code, obviously, for these agents, but do you support any kind of profiling of NDK apps, or is this all Java at this point?
It's all Java at this point, but if we have NDK users listening, they will probably have heard of SimplePerf that's been released in the NDK. That is a sampling profiler for native apps. In the new pipeline that we wrote, we have SimplePerf in mind, so we're going to have SimplePerf as one of the inputs for data. So we're going to support whatever SimplePerf is supporting now pretty soon.
All right.
Then we'll have native profiling in Android Studio.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice. I got no more.
What have we forgotten to ask you about?
What second button are you going to add in the next version? That's one of the most exciting developments.
I need to add a button like you did with a lightning bolt. I don't know what for, but I'll do a lightning bolt.
Yeah, yeah. The asset is just sitting there.
Yeah. We'll do that.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else. So, by the time you hear this, we will have launched. So You know, either no one will ever hear this or, you know, please try it and let us know. I mean, I think that particularly because you're doing bytecode instrumentation at build time, that can have drug interactions with other tools people are using, things like code covers and so forth, right? So we're very interested in feedback always on things like that.
Yes, please. We are launching this in the first preview of 2.4, so we have time to polish it and fix all these issues. So please report all these problems.
Oh, yeah, we should probably be more explicit. So 2.4 is not going to be final by the time this comes out. Instead, it's going to go out in the Canary channel?
Yep, Canary channel.
Okay. That's so where all the action is. So if you want to try 2.4 around the time you hear this podcast, check out the Canary
channel. I'm sure they already are for all the other good reasons, but profiling, I think, is a really very exciting feature. You know, we were talking to some users recently, and they said that their monitors were one of their favorite features of Studio. And we're like, what, the old ones? And it was hard not to reveal anything about what's coming, but now we can.
And you're going to take it away. Nice. Yeah, based on user feedback, we took away your tools.
We removed. What's the feature you like the most? Okay, it's gone. Next. It doesn't have any more problems now. When did we take it out?
Yeah. No, it's...
No, we're super excited. We really want user feedback. And we'll support more and more. We have a big set of features coming for O. We're going to basically change the pipeline in a way that you can attach this to... Oh, this is an important point, actually, that I forgot. Our plans in O are not to depend on Gradle anymore to do the Bytecode instrumentation. So if you are building your app using your favorite build system, we will be able to attach to your running app and do the instrumentation on the phone so we can get all the goodies and more because of the tooling API that I mentioned before. So we will no longer depend on Gradle when you have an O phone.
And as always, whenever we talk about future things, those are hopes, not promises.
Yes.
Nice.
All right. And with that, I guess thank you for...
I had one more question. You talked so much about user feedback. What is the best way for users to give feedback? So we have a blog post where we put the podcast, but frankly, the latency for comments on there is
Do you ever check them?
After a few months, I realize there's a bunch of spam and I go and delete it. And then I find a couple of valid questions and I'll try to get the engineer that we had on to answer them. But I think
b.android.com will.
So there's a better, there's a better way than that. It's you go to the help menu, you type in enter submit feedback.
Yeah.
That actually opens up the URL Esteban just
to
mentioned.
Submit a bug or with the
right
request.
Exactly. It just opens issue tracker to the right place with all the right, it fills in the version you're using and so forth. So you know, it's better if you actually follow that.
Cool.
Help submit feedback.
Cool. Thank you so much for having me today.
All right. Thank you.